Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi there, I'm Janet. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what is a podcast?
It's like the radio, but there's no music, and literally anyone can do one at any moment about any subject. And there's a billion of them.
Sounds great. Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about episode 107, The Eternal Shriek. In the aftermath of Michael deciding he is the problem with the neighborhood and therefore needs to be retired, Eleanor explores the option to keep him in the neighborhood by killing Janet. Chidi ends up accidentally resetting Janet. Eleanor realizes the situation is killing Chidi, so she confesses at the end that she is the problem with the neighborhood. Guest cast includes Steve Berg, Dominic Burgess, Jorge Diaz, Tiana Okoye, and Josh Siegel. Today my guests are Darcy Carden, who plays Janet, and the writer Megan Amram. Darcy Carden and Megan Amram, welcome. Everything is fine.
Thank you.
Okay, we have to stop. That we can't do it that way. That was terrible.
You're not in charge of us.
I almost just called Darcy Janet, so I'm really like obviously deep into this show and the podcast.
Is that method writing? What is that?
I just like love The Good Place. I'm such a super fan. I've seen almost every episode.
Almost every episode. You little squirt.
It's great.
You little squirt.
Darcy, let's start with Janet. What was your first introduction in the audition process? Is the Janet that we know the one you started with? What was that like?
This was a weird audition, maybe the weirdest audition I've ever done. We usually, before an audition, you get at least a few pages of a script, if not the full script. This was the few pages of script that we got were fake sides, which are like fake audition pieces. So I think I was playing a woman named Janet, but it wasn't the Janet that we know. It was a woman at a help hotline for broken dolls.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
The closest thing. Yeah. I think it was like an American Girl doll type thing. And the closest thing that we, the writers, could think of as a real life analog for Janet was like a very cheerful woman on a phone trying to help you.
Give advice.
People were frazzled.
Totally. Looking back, if it had said something about Siri or robot or something, I'm Mike Schur. Is that funny?
It's funny if you know that Mike Schur created the show.
Cool.
And if you don't, it's not
funny. It's not funny. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that we, the auditioners, would have been doing some like beep, bop, boop acting. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So anyway, it was very helpful that I didn't know who she was, that I just knew she was a helpful, unflappable gal.
So it legitimately didn't say Alexa or Siri?
No,
or
I didn't know that until after I got cast. And I did three auditions over the course of over a month.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
The experience of being one of the writers, and also the writers, I've been there since season one. The writers all knew, Janet, you're so sweet. The writers all knew the entire premise of season one and obviously all the characters before anyone like Darcy would have known who Janet was. And it was absolutely wild and also fascinating to watch people audition for a character that they did not know it was. But Darcy, I feel like you nailed it immediately.
Megan?
And that was also how that character became that character.
It was you. Megan?
You're so cute.
Well, that's so nice. I, you know, auditions are weird. They're just weird. This was like an extremely pleasant one. And you know, Mike Schur was there. And Drew Goddard, one of the producers, and these are two guys that I really look up to. And what going into it, knowing this would sort of be like my dream situation, and also knowing there was no way on earth I would get cast in this role, it was kind of a fun. I remember I would walk out of the audition and call my husband and be like, I don't know, man, that was fun. Like,
oh, good.
Like, I'm not going to get it, but that was, I don't know if it could have gone better. It was just like a great vibe. And then cut to getting it. The next day, I went in with Mike and Drew for a meeting, and that's when they explained the seriousness of her. That's a word.
It is.
And the I would say the first half of the season.
Sure.
Sorry to ask a question. I know I'm here to answer them, but
Your Honor,
did it stress you out at all to like hear that you were going to be playing a much more layered,
yeah,
non-real world,
yeah,
character?
It still does.
Yeah, but you're doing great, I think.
Hey, thanks.
I do too, but one could argue that it's less layered. Like, I could hear that you're playing the foundational mainframe of a neighborhood, and you might go, oh no, am I going to get boxed into being C-3PO or whatever?
Right, right. Well, I mean, that quickly, even in the first couple episodes, well, I would say actually in the first at least two episodes, there was that, you know, your actor brain is like trying to put more into it, more reactions and more emotions. So the first two episodes in particular, I would say there was some C-3PO-ing of it. Like I had to sort of pull back and be a little bit, not even flatter, just like more on the robotic side. And then quickly the writers really gave me the gift of life, which was getting to be rebooted and getting to, you know, like I was, I think episode three, like there was problem. Michael kept sort of messing with my settings.
Yes.
So there was like immediately, bugs. Quickly,
more nuance.
So many fun things to play with.
One thing I want to add about when Darcy got cast that I still think is extremely funny is when you got cast, we put out a fake like deadline headline.
Whoa.
I guess I'll just say it.
Sure.
A real deadline headline that was fake.
Yeah, so it was like announcing that Darcy was cast in this first episode of a show.
Actually, the whole thing, right?
Yeah, it was the whole thing.
Because we were picked up already.
So what we said is that she was going to play Janet, and I think it was like a violin salesman with a
checkered past,
which then was so funny to us.
Did that get posted?
Yes. Yeah, it got posted.
And my name was Janet D'Annunzio?
Yes, Janet D'Annunzio.
A violin salesperson with a checkered past.
We were like, first of all, this is so funny to think of people going like, what is Mike Schur's new show? And then seeing that and being like, oh, I guess that sounds right
that
for
NBC. That guy's lost it.
Keep going.
But then it just like didn't really get deleted from the internet because that's not how the internet works.
Right.
So I think on certain sites it still says that you play
I love
Janet
that so much. I
D'Annunzio.
Remember going into my manager's office after I got cast and he was kind of like, oh, we got to get you some violin lessons. Like he was like
so
already
funny.
Like so excited. Like whatever this character is, like let's get on it. If you're a salesperson, you got to know how to play violin.
Now I think Janet at some point should play Janet
I do too.
D'Annunzio.
Well,
so spoilers, we'll see.
We'll see.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And Deadline is never going to trust you guys ever again.
I know. Why would they?
You got to stick it to the man.
What was your first intro? How did Mike Schur pitch you this show when you were thinking of staffing?
Yeah. So I worked with Mike on Parks and Rec and had a very lovely experience. And was contacted by Mike before this show started up and was like, hey, do you want to come meet and work for my new show, basically? And I was like, yep, and had no idea what it was called, what it was about, and was just like, 100%, I trust you.
That makes a great deal of sense to me.
Yeah.
It does,
I mean, anybody
right?
that's ever worked with him before.
Yeah. Yeah. I truly trust no matter what he does that it's going to be like an extremely smart and fun experience. So then I had lunch with him like the next week and was like, okay, so what's your show about? And he pitched me the entire like, you know, outline for the pilot and then for the first season and the twist at the end. And I was so much more excited than I already had been because I really love genre stuff, and I just thought it was so clever and also gives you the opportunity as a writer to talk about really meaty things, which kind of encapsulate every single thing about being a human. I also think this episode that we're talking about kind of was one of the first episodes where the show starts getting like extremely bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end in season two, you start getting like just truly balls to the wall. I don't know if balls is a swear word, but
I don't think it is.
No.
Okay. Shirt that's balls. A shame. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's
shirt
right.
balls.
I think we're
wall.
All right.
But, yeah, it's been really fun for like my nerdy brain to think about sci-fi storytelling and also about like philosophy lectures I wish I could still go to in college.
So that was part of your background?
I would say just in general, I am a overall nerd who enjoys school more than like anything. So we've had some basically guest lectures at this show, like some visiting philosophers who we consult to make sure that our logic is airtight and that we figured out everything.
And are you unique in the room, or are a lot of the writers dorking out about that?
Oh man, it's a real, like if there was just one huge locker you could shove the entire writing staff in.
That's insane. It that they that he found you guys, you nerds.
Yeah.
You lot of nerds.
It also is, I think it's just very fun when girls call themselves nerds and yeah. are like, oh my
I'm
god, I'm like, ugh, I'm such a nerd. I love reading books. So very self-conscious of that.
But you are a legit nerd.
But I actually am.
Whoa.
Yeah.
My first intro to Janet was in the makeup trailer. It was when I met Darcy in person, but also met Janet, because I knew nothing about the show. Listeners to this podcast have heard the story of when Mike downloaded all the information moments before I went to set to step off the train.
Right.
And I went before that, moments before that, I was in the hair and makeup trailer, and Darcy and I met one another, and your eyes widened, and you said, oh, dear, you're playing Sean. And I said, yes. And you said, okay, you are going to have very many questions. I play Janet. You don't understand what that means yet. But if you have any questions, please come to me, and I will answer them. Like, it was 50-50,
that's
you
so
and
cute.
The character.
Right, right,
so
right.
so sweet. There- and at first, I was like, that seems very nice. I honestly don't know what she's talking about
right,
yet.
Right, right. But now it sort of makes sense.
I feel like you sense. Are Janet-y, and I mean that for the Janet-y Kane. That should be your
whoa.
Girl.
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, you're very sweet, very approachable. I feel like even if you didn't know the answer to something, you'd...
Let's find that answer.
Yeah, you'd be on the road to finding it.
I think that one way that stands out getting into the episode, I think it's a real testament to your performance of Janet, Darcy, is that the cold open of this episode involves you approximating human crying.
Oh, God.
And it's you wailing, and then Michael saying, oh, Janet, that was beautiful, and you say, yeah, and then they bump to the opening titles. On the page, that doesn't look like much. You must have had all the trust in the world that Darcy could pull that off.
I'm so glad you brought up that part, because that is exactly what happened. Is I wrote that thing, and to me, there is nothing funnier than like a person badly approximating being a person, if that makes any
yes,
sense.
Yes.
And we were like, yeah, I guess it's going to be based on like the performance of this, because on the page, it was just like probably I just smashed a bunch of letters
I think
together.
It was like-
Yeah,
or on like a lot of G's and H's or something.
Yeah, and it turned out so much better than I could have ever imagined, which is, I guess, why you want actors who are good to do stuff. Because writing only gets you so far, man.
Well, I'm just going to blush through every... Whatever. You can't see me blushing, so why even say it?
But I can hear it really well.
Yeah.
It sounds like metal screeching together.
That approximation of human crying was something that a few weeks ago, while we were recording the intros and outros for this podcast, we had Darcy do, and then we were like, I don't know if this works on the radio.
I know.
That's
it really
hilarious.
Is. You kind of have
well,
to
you
see
like,
it.
You have to see your
throw
head
your
thrown
head
back.
Totally.
Yeah.
And your shoulder.
Yeah. It's a whole thing. It was... it's also... This is like a weird little... a little peek into, I guess, what acting, I'm not sure, but acting for TV or film when there's a crowd there is like really sort of embarrassing. Yeah. Like obviously we do, you know, doing theater, there's obviously a crowd there and that's just the way it is and you're used to that. But when you're, when there's a camera up close to you and there's also like, you know, we had 80 extras, there's something really embarrassing about that.
I agree.
So it was, and not, you know, kind of not exactly knowing what to do for that particular moment and just kind of going with one's gut was a little scary, but I'll tell you who helped me. Ted Danson. And I'll tell you why. He's down for whatever.
Yes.
And so when I did that, he was not judging me. He was not like, he was like right on top of it. He's like, as you know, just the most giving, wonderful scene partner. So I felt fully supported.
Were you surprised to realize what a great dude Ted Danson was? I mean, I don't know if I was surprised, right. But it was like, oh, you're exactly who I thought you'd be or hoped you would be.
Even better almost, right? Yeah. Because it's like, he's been doing this for a while. Mm-hmm. And if he was like a little jaded, but still nice, we would be like, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But he's not even jaded. He's like more positive than we are. How many times a day does he say like, gosh, we're so lucky to be doing this? Or like, hey, this is our job.
Many.
Like, yeah, it's pretty great. Yeah.
He also, like from a writer's perspective, he could not be more lovely about like talking through things mm-hmm. with you as a writer. And I also like... he's extremely humble about his own performances and is always trying to be better. And I feel like on this episode, which was my first episode of the show, I was on set and he came up to me and was like, I'm really sorry about that last take. Yeah. Like, I'll get it next time. And I wanted to be like, dude, like, you should be slapping me in the face for like looking at you. You're incredible.
Right.
But I just like, could not believe how humble he is about his own.
And it's genuine.
It is genuine.
It's not some put on like fawning thing. Like he's legitimately, I think, aware of how fortunate he is in his career and his life and that we get to, you know, wear makeup and do pretend times.
Yeah.
You guys wear makeup?
Oh my goodness.
What?
Oh my God.
No.
That's like, must be a really fun aspect. I want to go to work as a writer in like full stage.
Yeah, you should.
Every day.
It
like,
is.
Like opera, like Broadway.
Yeah. That's what I'm imagining.
Huge eyelashes.
Mark Evan Jackson.
It is the weirdest, smallest little perk to this job is to not have to put on makeup in the morning.
Yeah.
Is to just like take a shower and put my hair in a ponytail and go to work. Because usually, you know, when you're a gal who wears makeup or a guy who wears makeup, let's be real.
Yeah.
It's 2000. What year is this?
I almost said 17.
It does take a while to, you know, get up and go, wait, we're talking about an episode. Let's get to it.
You introduce in this episode the concept of retirement.
Yes.
And it doesn't sound great.
No. And I feel like there are a few things in this episode that have become big mainstays mm-hmm. of the show. And it's also when we were building out the first season, it was fun to sort of be making up these rules as we went and then see which ones were very helpful world building mm-hmm. tools. So like Michael, his threat and what the title, The Eternal Shriek, comes from is he is explaining to the humans there that if he messes up that he'll be retired. And they're like, oh, that sounds nice. Right. Retirement's fun. And he's like, no. It actually means something different for us. And I can't remember any of the words
we
used in the episode because my brain is a sieve.
A sieve.
Is that? That's a
I would
word,
say
right?
Sieve.
Saf.
Oh, my brain is a saf.
Yeah, saf.
Yeah.
You're ladled onto
the flaming
surfaces of like a million hot suns.
And there's something about diamonds where Tahani says like, that sounds nice.
That sounds it's
nice.
Not.
It's not.
I mean, you guys, Ted Danson is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is the other thing I wanted to add about him. Like if he'd come up and be like, oh, that take was bad. I'm sorry. It's like, it always was the best take you've ever seen in your entire life. So Michael explains that he's going to have all these like horribly painful things happen to him for an infinite amount of time. And retirement is a real threat to him. So I think like part of the fun of watching season two is finding out what things we talk about in season one were real.
Right.
So Michael was drawing on his very real threat of being ladled onto sons. But we also, I think we really do get into the mythology of Janet a lot more in this episode because it's the first time that any sort of like mechanic aspect of her is touched upon. And mm-hmm. so when we bring up that she can be reset and functionally murdered. Mm-hmm. I also remember we figured that out in the room that Janet was going to be murdered. And just that phrase, like, this is the episode where Janet is murdered, is so funny.
Right.
But murdered specifically is so much funnier than killed.
Right.
Right. Right.
Like, this is the episode, or this is the episode where Janet dies. That's, like, not that funny.
Right. Murdered.
No, when she pops up on a borderless overhead big screen and says,
attention.
I have been murdered.
Yeah.
One thing stuck out to me in the rewatching of this, and I wonder how much of it is absolutely deliberate, but in this episode, you sort of foreshadow, you have Janet saying, because I can't eat, which becomes critical with the passing of the note in episode 113, that Eleanor writes herself a note.
Right.
Was that super deliberate?
Honestly.
To say the words, I can't eat.
Right.
I wanted to, like, sound as cool as possible, so I'm going to say it's super deliberate. But it was deliberate.
Okay.
And we have always tried to put – I'm so, like, used to not talking about any secrets of the show because it was, like, hammered.
I know.
Especially season one, which has been on TV for years now.
A year.
Honestly,
I'm like, oh, my God, people are going to find out what happened
with
the note.
I'm, like, a little nervous right now. And I'm like, no. All the information, it's out there.
It's because, like, literally the writers have – knew the secret of season one since day one of the writer's room. And everyone was so stressed that, like, we'd somehow be the one that ruined the whole show. And then this has been discussed at panels and things, but I think we both, Darcy and I, were on a panel after season one aired talking about season one with Mike Schur and Ted Danson and some other people. And we were discussing the secret, and everyone's like, we were so nervous. And then Ted was like, oh, yeah, I told everybody. And we're like, what? And he's like, yeah, it's a great twist. I told everybody.
I didn't tell my family. I mean, like, people didn't tell spouses.
Yeah.
And he was, I'm sure.
I mean, it was adorable.
Yeah.
It was not something we were upset by.
Jamila was particularly, like, paranoid about exposing it.
Yeah.
So she would answer no questions about, like, she would not.
She had almost like a fear that she was just going to scream it out, mm-hmm. like, even unprompted.
I was on a red carpet for a friend's movie a couple weeks ago, and they were like, so season three of The Good Place? And I was like,
gotta go.
And they were like, what can you tell us? And I was like, I can confirm that production has begun.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I
know. And then it's like, can I confirm that? Are we allowed to say that?
Season two.
Yeah.
Just getting back to the note thing, I think something fun that we have done with Janet is that
I need to point out that Darcy just banged her travel mug on the table and it made almost the Janet sound.
I heard that and I was like, for a second thought, I was imagining
you
it.
You said the word. Wait, say it again.
Janet.
Well,
that's good, though.
That seems like a comic book.
I mean, considering we're like in the world right now and not a TV show,
that was pretty good.
That was amazing. Okay. So something I wanted to just talk about in Ray, Janet, not being able to eat and hiding the note in her is I think it's really helpful for Janet's character to give her extremely specific rules. So part of what we talked a lot about when we were in the first few episodes of the show, like, developing the character of Janet was like, okay, like, literally, what is Janet? We make a lot of jokes about her not being a robot. She's not a robot.
Right.
And once Darcy was cast, we were able to, like, really put a face and a vibe to the character, which was great. But then also just being like, okay, well, Janet doesn't have, like, a plug.
Mm-hmm.
She's not, like,
rechargeable.
But she also can't eat. And she doesn't have, like, human
blood
stuff in her. And I think that's been something that I've really enjoyed is, like, figuring out what are the rules to Janet, including things that pay off. Like, she can hide things inside of her somewhere. Like, Michael at one point puts his entire arm down her mouth, which looks insane.
Disgusting.
And hilarious.
Yeah,
and
I love it.
Yeah.
Why don't we listen to a clip? You can see full episodes of The Good Place on NBC.com or the NBC app.
But Janet has learned and grown. She's essentially living a life. We can't kill her.
Not with that attitude, we can't. Listen, man, I'm dead, you're dead, we all died, and now we're killing her. Pay it forward.
No, that's not what that means at all. Eleanor?
Here we are. Just press that button and it's goodbye, Janet. Chidi, I can see that you're worried, and I just want to assure you, I am not human,
and I cannot feel pain.
Thank you, that helps.
However, I should warn you, I am programmed with a failsafe measure. As you approach the kill switch, I will begin to beg for my life. It's just there in case of an accidental shutdown, but it will seem very real.
Cool. So who's doing this, me or you?
Easily one of my favorite things was your switching between being the very clinical Janet offering the full instructions on how to reset her or murder her, and pleading for your life. That had to have been a ball.
It really was. Yeah. That's it. I mean, it was like... It felt like such a gift from the writers. I'm looking at you.
It's a tour de force performance.
Well, it was a tour de writing. Because like when I read that script, I was almost like, how am I so lucky to get to do this? Because it's just so well written.
We also could have done those. I mean, we shot so many Janet deaths that did not make the episode either, because we just did a ton of alt lines. The director, Trent O'Donnell.
Hello, Trent.
Who is incredibly
fun.
We
love him.
We were just like on the beach with Darcy doing these death scenes. And you, this show is very scripted. So like there's not as much room for improvisation as there was on a show like Parks and Rec.
For sure.
Because you also have to, you have all these rules and weird sci-fi things to keep in mind. But we'll always just try out, you know, as many jokes as you want just to get them on camera. My favorite one that did make it is when Janet holds up the photo of her children.
Oh, you referring to Tyler, Emma, and baby Philip?
Yes, it is like the funniest. I don't know who pitched that joke, but it's like the funniest thing.
One of the
that
kids
I've
had
ever
asthma.
Yes, it's such a rich backstory. And the photo is really great.
It also, I mean, it really did make it easier to act. Like
acted it so hard.
But like if it was just like please, 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 no, that's one thing. But like I got to play all these different, like
it felt like you were begging for your life.
Yeah, it made it so much easier and more fun.
Chidi's screams also of like
English
your feelings worked so well. It just was like I will never get sick of Janet like screaming with all of your acting ability and then just being like, no, it's okay. I was just doing that. Yeah.
That was a fun, I mean, I remember that day, shooting that day with you, and I was like, I'm pretty calm, I guess, as a person, but also playing Janet, I'm pretty, actors can be weird. Did you know this?
What?
Did you guys know that?
Sorry.
But when I'm playing Janet, I feel pretty okay. I feel pretty like normal, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I remember on this day, I felt like I was having a breakdown. I think I had to like call you and apologize. And I remember texting Kristen and Will afterwards to just be like, I don't know what was up with me yesterday, but I'm sorry.
Really?
It just was like a weird, I think just... highs and lows and dying over and over and again. I just was in a
weird place. It also was always amazing. Apologizing is always great. Just get that out of the way. But it also was like we shot it on a beach and like tide was coming in. And the fun thing is I remember our last takes of you dying were like running away from the ocean that was about to come get you. And I was like, this is wild. The fact that you could concentrate on acting while also like there's wind blowing and the ocean is coming to overtake you. But also you full on like hit the ground in a very safe way.
Very safe way.
But it like we wanted it to look
like a real,
like you were just like face planting.
Yeah. Like life had left my body, whatever that means. Right.
Which was so funny. And so you had to do it a lot of times.
How many times?
I think we counted, at least in the second season when I died over and over, that was around 40. 40 hit the grounds.
Unbelievable.
The first, I mean, I imagine that.
Has your face recovered?
My face is recovered.
That's awesome.
My face, the knees were, who cares? Can you imagine I'm like
you
complaining
look very
about
exfoliated.
It 2 years later? Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
Also, this was another very funny thing about that about 107. The next day or something, because we still had not premiered the show. We were just shooting.
Oh, I know exactly.
There was like a paparazzi photo that had been taken like from very far away of I think Darcy and Kristen on the beach. And I'm not sure if they framed it as like Kristen Bell is shooting her new thing or whatever, but it was very clear that It was like Kristen Bell and her friend.
Right.
And it's like Darcy's in a pantsuit in Malibu.
Right.
It's very clear that there's something weird
happening.
But I loved that there's like a shadowy paparazzi photo of episode somewhere.
Yeah. Find it.
What specifically went into the description and process of choosing red boots?
That is a great question because they've become very iconic. Uh-huh. I think we just were trying to think like what is the most garish yet basic thing
right.
that could be in that Chidi story. The guy who played Chidi's friend, Dominic Burgess,
was
incredibly funny because he really, I feel like sometimes you describe characters to the actors and you're just like, yeah, man, I don't know what to tell you. You're just like a nice guy who really loves these boots.
That's it.
It's like pretty much just that.
And
he totally
action.
Nailed it. And it's like, yeah, I love that this episode had some very cartoony storylines in it, which I think our show manages to deal well with while also keeping grounded. But like, I like a zany story. So like the fact that Chidi's whole flashback is about these red boots that are haunting him.
Having kept that lie.
Yeah.
I like to think that those red boots are still haunting.
Is this the first time that we hear that this is why everybody hates moral philosophy professors?
Yes, I think it is. And then that, of course, has become the tagline of the show, which is very, I feel like it's kind of as close as we have to a tagline. I guess everything is fine. Is pretty good, too.
Your basic is good.
But this is why everyone hates moral philosophy professors, is just really pithy.
This episode also shows us the beginning of a new relationship after Janet is rebooted. The playing field is level with Jason Mendoza or Jianyu.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, this is like the moment where we kind of, where our little brains meet up. The perfect moment where we're both.
All based around the word hi initially.
Oh my goodness.
Hi.
I think that it's something that we happened into through a comedy means of like, Janet is going to be stupid now, basically, because she has been rebooted. It's going to take her a while to download her consciousness and mainframe back into what it normally is. And it came out of that Jason would really be able to connect with her at this point. But then it feels so natural for them to be a couple that I kind of can't believe that that's the first time you see it and what the introduction was. But it's like, because they're both very sweet. And I think that you didn't know Jason that well at the time. But part of what I love Jason so much and part of why is because he's very dumb, clearly, but he's like so well-meaning about it. Doesn't have like, he's done a lot of bad stuff, but he doesn't really have a malicious bone
in his body.
I was going
to say, when he does the bad things, he's not doing it for
harm. He kind of is too stupid to understand that you can't like throw firecrackers at a dolphin
explosion.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's just like a sweet puppy to
me.
And Janet also is so sweet and well-meaning. And in a lot of ways, even when she knows everything, very naive.
Right.
So it does, to me, seem like two perfect, like, sweet puppy dogs.
I totally agree. I agree. And it also makes sense even – whoa, yeah, one true pairing.
I read a lot of fanfic.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's some blog talk. or Tumblr, I should say.
Yeah, thank you.
I like the idea that the way you sort of connect with your first love – or any love, but when you fall in love with somebody, you know, that the moment where they fall in love, for lack of a better word, I don't really know what to call it.
Go for it.
You know, even when she does get smarter and download the knowledge of the universe and everything, she still has that to hold on to. Like, he's her man.
And it's just like a very pure relationship. No one wants anything more out of it than just like, being with the other person. It's very cute.
This just occurred to me now, and I'm getting ahead of us, but when Janet has the opportunity to create her own new love, she creates Maximum Derek, which is sort of in the image of a Jason Mendoza.
We definitely talked a lot about Derek as like, basically as if Janet was like a teen girl who still had a crush on Jason and was like really upset by what was going on and like, all of those feelings got all jumbled up and then made this like real
Derek
mess up. Dude, yeah. Derek.
A very sweet thing happens at the bottom of this episode. It's maybe the first indication of Eleanor becoming a good person.
Yes.
And it's one of the first things that I think that Michael was unable to plan for, and that is that Eleanor confesses.
This was such an exciting... I feel like as a writer, you get assigned episodes by your showrunner, which usually have some sort of like, or either by seniority or like thematically make sense for you to write them. But you also just like luck out sometimes with having amazing moments in your episodes. So I very luckily got to have this Eleanor stands up and confesses. And it like, we since day one with this show have tried to sort of predict what the audience might think we're going to do and then do it like five episodes earlier than
they think
we're going to do it. So this was our first move. And that's very overt. We talk about that. Like if you're a savvy viewer, you might think like, okay, so they say this show is going to be about a woman in The Good Place for, you know, every episode, but maybe the season one finale will be that she confesses or gets found out, and that's the big cliffhanger.
And we would have been satisfied with that. The audience would have been like, yeah, that's fine.
That's a show. That's great.
That's something that I meant to mention to Mike in the first episode of this podcast was like, it was still a good show before the twist.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we were like, okay, so that's what people might think would happen. So we're going to do that in episode seven instead. And I think that is marks the place where the show sort of starts ramping up into. And you're totally right, which it was the first thing that Michael really, really had not anticipated when he was planning this neighborhood. But I just think the episode that we as an entire room all broke together worked so well because it ended up, while being a hilarious story about Janet, also really bonded Chidi and Eleanor together. She was doing something like really wonderful for her friends, basically, by admitting that she was the problem. She had no ulterior motives.
She says, I love you, man, right before doing it, which is, it touched
me. You also can kind of see her decide when she's like, great, we did it, we're good, we're all good. And he's like, this is going to haunt me forever.
Right.
And he's clearly like, I will never get over this, but okay, whatever you want. And you could see her kind of take it in. And I love Eleanor and Chidi so much.
It's also, I personally really liked the philosophical like theme, if you will, for this episode was about lying. And it was, is lying ever okay? Mm-hmm.
What does Kant say?
Kant is, he's one of the greats. But
that sounds like an answer when you don't know the answer. You're like,
one of the greats.
Immanuel Kant, top five.
Yeah,
top
definitely
five.
One of the greats.
Well, Chidi's stance, as is Kant's, is that lying is never okay. And it's like something that is always harmful to the world. That's not the cool philosophical terms, but whatever.
No,
and
that's
I think
correct.
It's, for me, that was very interesting because, like, I think it's very easy for most of us to justify lying in like contextually in different situations. So I thought it was interesting learning about a philosophy where like genuinely there is absolutely no circumstance under which you can lie to anyone. But also it fit really well for Chidi's character, obviously, and was great like story. It was a great story engine because it was like you have to jump through all these hoops to figure out ways to solve your problems. I think we crushed it. I'm not taking credit for this. I'm the collaboratively taking credit.
I wanted to say one more thing about this episode.
Please do.
The speech that Michael gives, where he's kind of saying all the things he wanted to do on Earth before, or not on Earth, but as a human, basically.
Human stuff,
is, to me, one of the best moments in the entire show up to this point. It is so... I was going to swear. I could swear, but I'm not going to. It is so good. It's so funny and so sad and just so, like, ooh, subtle.
We like to ask people what's good. What's something in your life, a charity that you support, or something that makes you happy?
Holy
shirt.
I wasn't prepared for this.
That is a great question. The first thing that comes to my head is a charity that is in Tennessee, and I highly recommend giving to them, but also following them on social media. It's called the Old Friends Dog Sanctuary.
Oh, I was going to do a doggy one.
You can do a dog one too. It just like, I'm so obsessed with this place. Yeah. It is a like big ranch in Tennessee outside of Nashville that seemingly houses hundreds of old dogs that like their families couldn't take care of, or they didn't, you know, they were in a pound or whatever. And it's just all these old dogs who live together as friends and a bunch of people who take care of them. And it is so sweet and sincere. And to cut through all this comedy crap that I deal with at work, I just go on their Facebook and, or Facebook's bad, Cambridge Analytica, go on their Instagram and just like look at these sweet old dogs just living out their days in the sunshine.
Now, this is funny because I was, as soon as you asked that, my first thought was this shelter called A Purposeful Rescue, which is exactly the same thing, but it's here in LA.
Seems like they should compete.
Yeah, they should. Yeah, let's. No, it's an old animal, dog and cat and probably more, shelter. And one of the writers from our show adopted a dog from them. But it just makes sense because here's the thing we didn't talk about in the episode. I am kind of like Janet, but guess who else is? Megan, which means that we are very similar.
I do think that it's the character I'm most like. And I also feel like
doubt.
We as people are pretty similar and
are.
Our friends.
Yeah.
As you can tell from our rapport.
Yeah, we have a great rapport.
I was here the whole time. I saw it.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
But that's for another episode. But Megan is very Janet-y.
The psychology episode where we really open ourselves up.
Yeah.
This was very closed-minded.
Darcy Carden, Megan Amram, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having us, and we'll come back.
Please take
I'm
it
really
sleazy.
Busy. Yeah.
Oh, are you? Okay. Oh, wait. I like that. Say that again.
Yeah.
Please take it sleazy.
You take it sleazy, Mark.
You've been listening to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Now go do something good.
Hi there. The podcast is over. I think what I'm feeling is sadness.
Oh, don't worry, Janet. This podcast is the most perfectly engineered invention since the paperclip.
Fun fact, the man who invented the paperclip is in The Bad Place for tax evasion.
It's available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop saying podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
Music composed by David Schwartz. Yay.